It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussel. For the past 14 years, May has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, May Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is May Brussel, Carmel, California. This is Dialogue Conspiracy number 293, and it's November the 6th, 1977. I have quite a lot of material here to share with you on this program, and this may turn out to be a two-part series like I've done before, because it's impossible to untangle this web clearly for you in 30 minutes. So I believe that this week and next week will be a continuing series, and maybe more if necessary. It has to do with the killing of Martin Luther King, with the murder of Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy. It has to do with a gentleman named Robert Byron Watson, who's in prison at the present time in Memphis, Tennessee. He heard plans made in the coin shop that he worked with in the art gallery in Memphis, Tennessee, for the assassination of Martin Luther King. He was in the back room, and he heard these gentlemen talking about getting King the next week when he came to Memphis. And then he had travails of telling officials in the federal government in 1970 he wanted to express his feelings about these assassinations because they were being opened up again. And that's when his real problems begin. This tale also has to do with the international narcotic market, the syndicate that runs the White House and the federal government, the organized crime that Martha Mitchell said Nixon is the mafia. It has to do with gold and silver markets and exchange with narcotics and stolen goods in South America. And it has to do with the what we think are the terrorist organizations that come to my mind. This is why I'm talking about the subject this time, because the terror that is done by the hijackings and the bank robberies and a lot of that's going on is not from the left at all. These are not left organizations, but are funded from the right and are funded from people stirring up a lot of trouble who are involved in smuggling and narcotics traffic and members of the John Birch Society. Not every member. I don't mean to talk about every member, but I'm going to talk particularly about a man who's throwing a lot of weight in Congress right now, Larry McDonald, congressman from Georgia, Marietta, Georgia, home of the Lockheed scandals, who is talking about Maoists and communists and is probably the most far-right member of the Congress at the present time, if there is such a thing. Many of them are, but he is one of the most vocal right-wing members, and it's this character that Robert Watson has been talking about. In his court records, he's been trying to get a hearing and a fair shake. And he first was writing to David Wemple, a researcher on the assassinations in upstate New York, and he was corresponding with David Miller in Florida. And then he got my address and my material that I had written and began to correspond with me. And so I have with me copies of some of his letters and also his affidavit and signed sworn depositions. So that this is what he was saying in court, and I'll preface it by that because he does throw a lot of names around, and this was part of his court record, so I want to share it with you. Robert Watson, Brian, wrote to me in September 28th. This was just last month, end of September. I'll read you part of his letter. He said, "I received your letter, dated September 23rd. He's in the Memphis, Tennessee jail. I had said that Mrs. Martin Luther King is not doing anything about the assassination, and neither is Andy Young, who was with Martin Luther King when he was assassinated, and I didn't have much confidence in Jimmy Carter. He said, Mrs. King does care, and Andy Young does care. She said, you're wrong when you say they don't. On Friday, September the 16th, 1977, my mother received a telephone call from the White House regarding me and my situation, and they said, some pleasant surprises were in store for you in regards to future developments in the investigation of the King slaying. You needn't worry about my safety presently." He had been threatened with death threats, and they put him in a somewhat solitary confinement. He said, "I'm perfectly safe here in the administration detention in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm a little afraid that something might happen to me while I'm being transferred from here to somewhere out in Texas. They're moving this witness to conversations on the killing of Martin Luther King into the Texas area now. And he also talked about these people and the way they had planned the murder of Robert Kennedy. And for some reason, he's nervous about Texas, and I would be too. He said, when the White House telephoned my mother on September 16th, my mother was advised that they were looking into giving me time cut, which could mean that I would be released before the summer of 1978. He would like to get out of jail and pursue the course of investigation that he was talking about before. And he said that the judge, Charles Weltner, from the Atlanta attorney in Atlanta, Georgia, is the most conservative Republican, former congressman, before his defeat by Andy Young, turned down all of my lawyer's motives to get my civil suit out of default. A civil suit was placed against him. A fee of $1,800 was slapped upon him for naming these people in this assassination conspiracy and as being swindlers, and yet no investigation by the federal government or the Justice Department has gone into what were his allegations. This is part of the affidavit and citation that Robert Byron Watson had. He claims that Mr. Larry McDonald of Marietta, Georgia, who is now a congressman in the United States House of Representatives, was closely associated with Mr. Jerry Adams, who's the owner of the Adams & Associate Agency, as well as the Great American Silver Company. And Mr. Herman Jackson, who uses the name Herman Ballard as an alias, and Mill Jackson, who is Herman Jackson's brother, and Larry McDonald, frequently went to the Magellan Art Galleries on Peachtree Road in Atlanta, Georgia, during 1967 and 1968. And he mentions other people that were at that gallery who owned the gallery and were associated with it. And he claims that it was in that gallery, at the Magellan Gallery, that he heard conversations on the killing of Martin Luther King and the assassination, which did in fact take place 1 week later. He said in the summer of 1974, Mr. Herman Jackson, who was associated with this organization, was active smuggling gold from South America. And in the summer of 74, Mr. Jackson made a trip to South America in connection with gold bullion smuggling. And they asked me at that time to work for the syndicate and be involved in illegal transactions. And Mr. Jerry Adams, who had this art gallery, said the syndicate had provided a tremendous amount of campaign funds to Larry McDonald's campaign. This is the affidavit of Robert Byron Watson. I'm not saying it's true or untrue, but this is what he said, that they were bragging about paying a member of the Congress, who is our most far-right member of Congress these days, and they said in quotes, it was such a manner that the funds would never be able to be proved to be a source of future embarrassment to Mr. McDonald. He claimed that money comes in from Mexico to fund the congressmen and other persons that are involved in the syndicate, and that the collection agency is called the Great American Silver Company. He went on to talk about the syndicate sending stolen parts to South America, and then in return drugs were returned back in exchange. And they had stolen equipment, electronic equipment, components, industrial equipment. Costly material is sent down to South America. Four countries that he mentioned were involved in this, and only four: Chile, Peru, Costa Rica, and Colombia. And that the syndicate down there receives these stolen goods, and then in return the narcotics come back, and there's no hold. The government will not do anything about them coming in from Chile, Peru, Costa Rica, or Colombia. He said Mr. Herman Jackson was in charge of the smuggling from South America through Mobile, Alabama, and then later it sold in the Great American Silver Company. And a Mr. Anthony N. Malik and Mr. U. Franklin are owners of a coin company, Liberty Coin Company, in Atlanta, Georgia, are involved in these transactions. Now, these names are important because he goes into their activities in South America, not only their criminal activities, but they were connected with a man named Hector in Mexico, of Mexican birth. And I think the Mexican connection is important when they get into the Robert Kennedy assassination, because I have talked in August on Dialogue Conspiracy about the evidence of N.K. Fields, who lives in Sacramento, with the Mexican connections to the Robert Kennedy assassination. This information goes on that Hector was of Mexican birth, And the syndicate brought in tons of Mexican marijuana into Atlanta, Georgia, and smuggled them through the port, as I say, of Mobile, Alabama. He goes on and mentions many names of the syndicate service that had a shipment going of gold bullion smuggling, narcotic smuggling, funding a congressman in particular, and other public officials. He goes on to say that this Dr. Anthony N. Malik is a Lebanese national by birth and not of Greek descent, as Dr. Anthony N. Malik has often stated. He's told people he's Greek, and he's not. He's Lebanese. And his name would indicate, you couldn't tell by the name. Mr. Herman Jackson said that Dr. Anthony Malik had been for many years associated and worked with Jerry Adams from the Magellan Gallery and Mr. Harold Purcell and Minister Lawrence Meyer. Mr. Herman Jackson said that Dr. Malik operated as a double agent for the, I suppose, the CIA. It comes later out that he introduces himself as CIA, but he's a double agent working constantly with such Arab terrorist groups as the Black September Group, the Palestine Liberation Group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine Group, as well as various radical organizations. And what you have here is a funding of groups of people which are not any different than the Baader-Meinhof gang, which caused a lot of trouble in Germany and were killed, or the Japanese Red Army. These armies, I've said all along, the Black September Group was funded from the right wing. You get an international narcotics group selling their dope, bringing it into this country, playing around with the gold market, funding terrorist groups, because the end result of terror on the right that was used by the Tsar to terrorize people and Adolf Hitler and then brought from Germany out to countries all around the world is to make the demand for more police. When we had a few hijackings in this country, we had police at every airport. You can't laugh or kid about it, the airports. And it gives a lot of lectures for politicians. We have to get tough on the terrorists. The airline people are all now angry about the terrorists. We need more guards. We need more police. Then they'll beg for Interpol, the international police, which was Hitler's Gestapo in the first place. And you get a full cycle of terrorism and right-wing fanatics and people like Larry McDonald of the John Birch Society, high up in the society, who has been named by this party as being funding or part of groups associated with people who, like Dr. Anthony Malik, he says, was working with the Black September, the Palestinian Liberation, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. This Watson, Robert Byron Watson, said, I asked Mr. Herman Jackson if Dr. Anthony N. Malik had anything to do with the assassination of Robert Kennedy. He told me that Dr. Anthony Malik was the man who conceived of most of the plans and worked out most of the details which were employed to assassinate Robert Kennedy, as well as to cover up the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy. He further stated, Mr. Herman Jackson, that the assassination of Robert Kennedy was the true work of genius because the American people were ready and willing to believe that some crazy misfit of a Palestinian either acted alone or acted for an Arab terrorist group assassinating Senator Robert Kennedy because of his pro-Israeli sentiments. Now, those statements are exactly out of the words, as I say, of Mr. Fields. It was August 1st and 8th on Dialogue Conspiracy of this year. In case you don't have the tapes, you can order tape cassettes of those shows. And he was talking about using a misfit or a person, the type of Sirhan Sirhan, who would be a front or a patsy, and that they would have a fall guy and call him a misfit who was against Robert Kennedy recognizing Israel. The script here of this person in a prison in Memphis, Tennessee, who has no access to the research of Mr. N.K. Fields, it's by Robert Byron Watson, sworn and stated, and naming in Mexico, their contact in Mexico, overlays the other work, and it's this kind of research coming in from different sources, which is interesting, because they have no way of getting to know each other, and yet their information seems to be true. As I say, this person said that they would use the connection of the crazy misfit, and the excuse would be Kennedy's pro-Israeli sentiment. Of course, it went on to say the main motive before the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy is the fact that if he were elected president, he would have used the information and material which he collected when he was the Attorney General under Robert Kennedy was the Attorney General. to open up investigations into the activity and business dealings of certain high-ranking members of the syndicate. Robert Kennedy was the only American official of any stature in the Justice Department that was looking into the syndicate. And, of course, that is one of the reasons, if not the primary reason, that he and his brother both had to be killed. Watson went on, the syndicate is also known as the government within the government because of the tremendous number of syndicate people who hold top-level positions within the federal government. Well, we know that the CIA is called the government within the government, and the syndicate is the government within the government, and the CIA and the syndicate work together. The CIA would have the syndicate do their political assassinations, and still do, in order to maintain controls of the exact countries he was talking about, like Chile and Peru and Costa Rica and Colombia. And, of course, the big narcotics traffic comes in, and we can control these countries for the narcotics profits as well as the oil and copper contracts, so that countries like ITT, the organizations, the businesses like ITT can take over Chile for the copper for their telephone poles, and the narcotics can come in from Chile. The control of Chile, Peru, Costa Rica, and Colombia is named here as centering this gang of people. But Robert Kennedy was going into organized crime, and he says the syndicate is known as a government within a government because of the amount of people who have top-level positions within the federal government, and it is hard to separate those two. If elected president, Senator Robert Kennedy would certainly have reopened the investigation into the assassination of President John Kennedy, which would have destroyed some of the most powerful and influential people in the United States. Once Senator Robert Kennedy became president, he would have begun conspiring to undermine the big industries. The government within the government and the entire American free enterprise system is based upon holding together those industries and the narcotics traffic. If Robert Kennedy were president of the United States, he would have ended the war in Southeast Asia and stopped the arms and ammunition sale to the Arab nations, for which the United States is a major supplier of arms and ammunition. And this is true. The figures on this can't be doubted at all on the amount of business we do selling arms to the Middle East. That action alone would have caused a major economic depression because the economy of the United States cannot function unless the United States is engaged in a war or unless the United States is selling arms and ammunition to warring nations. In other words, Senator Robert Kennedy was assassinated because if he were to have been elected president, he would have destroyed the entire American system, and he would have incited the blacks to run amok in the streets of every city in America and turn the country into a communist dictatorship within a few short years. Senator Robert Kennedy, according to the higher-up government within a government, as well as the syndicate that worked at the lower level that we're talking about, had to die so that he would never become president of the United States. Everyone within the syndicate knew that if Kennedy assumed power and influence as the Attorney General, he would have used that power and influence to expose and destroy the syndicate. Watson went on to say in his court deposition, he signed an affidavit and citation, and it was under sworn oath, that George Wallace might have made a good president. That George Wallace, however, if he were elected as president of the United States, if he had not been shot and crippled or had a chance to be elected, he would have exposed the government within a government because he would never allow these people to control the government as much as he would want it. They would control the decisions and policies, and he says George Wallace would want to control them. He wouldn't want the syndicate controlling the policies or decisions. But with Richard Nixon, when he was in power, the policies and decisions of organized crime were good for him, and he liked them. The biggest problem with George Wallace was that he was just too honest. If Wallace ever had become president of the United States, and if he ever got wind of all of this going on inside the federal government, he would immediately have to begin investigating into the syndicate and every agency of the federal government, which he believed warranted investigation. For those of you that picked up on the last 15 minutes or so of this show, this is Mae Brussel, and I'm talking about a person named Robert Byron Watson, who worked at a gallery in Atlanta, Georgia, and heard people talking about, he's in Memphis, Tennessee now, it was in an art gallery in Marietta, Georgia, and in Atlanta, that he heard them talking about the plans for killing Martin Luther King, and a week later, King was murdered, and he went on, he was put in jail, and he had contacted Bernard Fensterwald in Washington, and we'll go into that, to try to expose what he had heard and the people that were into these various operations of coin and smuggling and heroin smuggling and narcotics in general. And he got slapped into jail. Some heroin was planted on him, and he's serving time for that now. And he feels it's because he tried to expose this operation. He said Robert Kennedy had to die, and this was the consensus of all the people that he was working with in this particular gallery. He actually was an art appraiser and just happened to be working in this gallery and heard the conversations. They sent him out for a Coca-Cola and a sandwich, and he wasn't hungry. It was Peachtree Road in Atlanta, Georgia, that this conversation of killing Martin Luther King took place. And then he went on and documented the characters that he was working with. He said, during my incarceration in the Federal Youth Center in Ashland, Kentucky, when he was first arrested, Dr. Anthony N. Malik identified himself to Mrs. Watts and his mother as being a agent, special agent for the CIA and for the federal government. And he told Robert's mother, Mrs. R.W. Watson, that the Central Intelligence Agency was conducting an investigation on these various people that he had named in the art gallery, and he named them, and that they were looking into the suspicion of narcotics travel and the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. He identified himself as being of the CIA, but it didn't work out that way. And what happened was that Robert Watson was locked up as being a snitch later, and the truth didn't come out. In the meantime, he heard that a Bernard Fensterwald in Washington, D.C., had an organization that was investigating the assassinations, and he didn't know that Bernard Fensterwald was of the CIA, and so he asked Fensterwald for help, and that again was his downfall, because both Fensterwald and his partner are in the CIA, and that got Watson locked tighter up, and it didn't serve his purpose. He heard that, as I say, that Fensterwald had this office with Mr. Olhausen, who has been identified as being in the CIA, on 16th Street in Washington, D.C. So he sent them a letter regarding Dr. Anthony Malik, who visited his mother and said he was working for the government, and talked about the assassination of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. And he thought Bernard Fensterwald would be interested in the committee to investigate assassinations. A lot of people have said that Fensterwald's assistant, Mr. Smith, who went on to visit Watson, was in the CIA. And when he went for help, this committee was set up in Washington, D.C., which was a conduit or a source for the researchers to all come running with their information and their goodies. And then Fensterwald went about dividing the real researchers, the good researchers, from the people that would continue the cover-up and divide us or insult us. But he trusted him. He had nowhere else to go, and he wrote to him and told them about his problems. And Dr. Anthony Malik, who had visited him, and Mrs. Watson, denied later that he said he was with the CIA, and he didn't have much to say about that. He said, I'm really working for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And then he went on with his organization of the Palestine Liberation Group, the Popular Front Group, and did identify himself as working with the Palestinian group who've been called the terrorists, and he has been a part of that. Mr. Watson said that during my last visit with Mr. Habash Ansara at his office that was located in no other than Santiago, Chile, Mr. Habash Ansara told me, this is Robert Watson, working for these people before he was busted, that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, as well as the Palestine Liberation Organization, suspected for a long time that Dr. Anthony Malik was associated with and working for the CIA and the United States government. And Mr. Habash is the brother of the famous Arab terrorist leader, Dr. George Habash, of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. He's also director of the Santiago de Chile office of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Furthermore, they inform me that these organizations, the Palestine Liberation Organization, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, had suspected Dr. Anthony Malik of working for the CIA for a long time and with the federal government, and that all these people in some capacity in Chile had worked together. And ever since Dr. Malik's visit to Chile immediately prior to the CIA-backed overthrow, murder of President Salvador Allende of Chile, he had been with the CIA. So these men had been down in Chile prior to the assassination of Salvador Allende and worked with these terrorist groups and worked with a member of Congress, if not more than a member of Congress, and are involved not only in terrorism but in narcotics traffic down in Central and South America. Mr. Jackson informed Robert Watson that the government within a government did have Arab nationalists in there. He named them by names, and that they worked with the CIA, and they did arrange to have Arab terrorist sympathizers work with Sirhan Sirhan and set him up as a patsy to assassinate Senator Robert Kennedy. Now, he goes on to say in this affidavit that they set up Sirhan to assassinate Robert Kennedy out of loyalty for the popular front of the Liberation Palestine. There's one catch here, that if members of organized crime and the Palestinian group were working in Mexico and setting up a patsy, like the Fields story in Mexico, there's still a person above them. There's a godfather above them, and that's the Central Intelligence Agency, because they made sure that a man from Lockheed in California was the security guard for Robert Kennedy that night, and it has been alleged that Thane Caesar did the fatal shots and that Mr. Caesar was standing behind Robert Kennedy. So that while one group of people at a lower level was setting up the cover story of Sirhan or making him think that he did kill or even giving a weapon that he was capable to kill, he didn't get the bullets. His bullets didn't get inside of Robert Kennedy, but he still thinks he did, or his memory is erased. He wants to relive it to see what happened. And I don't think Sirhan has even had access to all of the facts. Maybe he has had or can't remember. But this team was working at the lower level because Watson says that they set up Sirhan to assassinate him, and yet there isn't any hard evidence that Sirhan did do it. But just having him in the Ambassador Hotel and having him with a gun that shoots and having him shoot at that particular time was enough to make the almanacs, the world books, the history books, the court trials say that Sirhan did it. And yet it's the allegations of this Robert Watson that this was set up and that they were in this conspiracy to set up Robert Kennedy's assassination. And then he goes on to say in his correspondence with David Wemple in New York and to David Miller and myself that it was in this shop that he heard the assassination plans for Martin Luther King. I told my mother shortly after that Martin Luther King was going to be murdered. And sure enough, it was only within a few days, a week exactly, that Martin Luther King was murdered. My life was threatened. I was threatened to be killed, and I remained silent until 1970 when I attempted to bring this matter to the officials in Washington, D.C. That's when he contacted Bernard Fensterwald and Ken Smith. They got the most publicity in the national media on radio and TV as being interested in the assassinations. So he had no one to go to but them, and it was after he went to them and told them about these conspiracy plans that he heard that then his own house was threatened to be burnt down. He got threats that he'd be killed. They told him as an informer that he'd be harmed, and then some syndicate narcotics was sent to his home from Bangkok. It was heroin, and then there was arrest, and he was put in jail and busted, and he's been threatened to be killed in jail. And I told Robert Watson I would do a radio show on this, and I may do more next week, on Dialogue Conspiracy, because it involves the drug agencies that hushed him up, the threats on his life, and he hopes to be out of jail on this bust. He hasn't had a fair hearing. The Washington Committee, I think, is passing him up. Mark Lane went to see Robert Watson and Dick Gregory when they did their book on Martin Luther King and promised to put something in about him, and they didn't. And he was very disappointed, and it's a shame they didn't. I hope he stays alive, and maybe we'll do a little more on this next week. If it's not clear enough, I covered a lot of material. But that is a person who heard plans to kill Martin Luther King and tried to tell people, and the end result was that he was threatened, and he's now in jail. Well, it's Dialogue Conspiracy. Time is over now. One more time. Have a good week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel.